This is the School Success Podcast, a podcast for school leaders to learn from other school leaders what's working and what's not, and to get inspiration and encouragement, as well as strategies to grow school enrollment, connect with families, retain teachers, recruit teachers, and everything in between. You guys are heroes, and I cannot thank you enough for pouring into this next generation that's coming behind us. My goal is you will take at least one thing away from every episode that you can take back to your school to make it better than it is right now. Please enjoy the School Success Podcast. Hey, School Success Makers, welcome to another edition of the School Success Podcast. I'm your host, Mitchell Slater, and I'm joined by a new friend from across the pond over in England, in Frimington, England, as a matter of fact. His name is Paul Bate, and he is a retired school principal. He's been in education for a really, really long time. We're going to dive into all those things, as well as the makeup of education over in England. So I thought this would be a really, really fun episode for you guys, so hope you will enjoy it. But before we dive into all that, I do want to highlight our amazing sponsors over at America's Christian Credit Union. They are celebrating 65 years of service this year, and they provide essential school banking services and a tuition financing program for schools that are looking to reduce their risk and administrative burden. So if you're a Christian school and you collect tuition and you're chasing people all year round trying to get the tuition, and because people won't pay you, and at the end of the year, maybe you only collected 90%, 95% of what you were owed, that's missed revenue for your school that you need to be getting. And so what you can do is sign up for free with America's Christian Credit Union, and your families can get a tuition financing loan from them. You get your money up front as the school, and then they will pay it just like a regular loan to the credit union. And boom, everybody's happy. Win-win for everybody involved. And again, it doesn't cost your school anything. And you can check out all of that on their website at americaschristiancu.com/schools. That's americaschristiancu.com/schools. All right. Well, as we dive into today's episode, I'm going to pass it off to Paul to introduce himself. So, Paul, welcome to the podcast today, sir.
Thank you. It's good to be with you. I'm looking forward to it.
It's going to be fun. And I always start with the same question for everybody. So I say, if I was to come visit you in Frimington, what would you say, Mitchell, you got to do this to have the full Frimington experience? Is there something over there you're like, you got to do this? Now, obviously, I'm over here in the United States, so there's probably a whole bunch of things I could do that is going to be way more fun. But tell me, what would I do?
Well, we're on the Atlantic Ocean, opposite side from you. We got some of the best beaches here in the UK, in England. So you bring your surfboard over and you can surf the big waves, the Atlantic waves that we have. How about that?
Well, I love that. What about food? You get food too?
Yeah, we got some super restaurants around. Yeah, many, because it's a resort area, so people come holidaying here. The holiday season's just finished. Schools started last week. They went back, the children, to schools. So the holidaymakers now have disappeared, more or less.
All right, very good. Well, I do live here in Florida, and I surf. I'm not great, but I can get up and ride a wave in, so maybe I'll come over and surf in England. That'd be one heck of a story. I like it.
You got one over me.
Well, you've been in education for a long time there, Paul. So I'd love to, and I know you retired, so congratulations on retirement there. I would love to just kind of get a little bit of your story of how you got all the way to retirement. Kind of some of the, I know you worked with a lot of different schools, led a couple of different schools, but we'll kind of talk about your story first, and then I'll get into some of the questions I have for you.
Okay. Well, overall, I worked in a total of 6 schools. Over a 40-year period. There were a mixture of different schools. Four of them were state schools, and 2 of them were independent private schools. So I was a head teacher of the last 2 schools, and they were both independent Christian schools as well. I'd say evangelical Christian schools, which are fairly rare in the UK. But before that, I taught in middle-class schools and also in schools in tough areas. So quite a variety of different experiences and different kinds of children to encounter and to teach. So it was very challenging, but also very rewarding too. I tried accountancy before I went into teaching, working with KPMG, a big accountancy firm, and decided that was not my vocation. it was going to be somewhere else, a more people-orientated person. So I ended up going back to university and qualifying as a teacher. Original degrees in economics, but I have degrees also in marketing, in education, and a master's in Christian education. So that's my background there. I've also been a school inspector. I was an inspector for over 20 years. And I've also been a soccer referee. I refereed football matches for over 20 years too. So now in retirement, main occupation is public speaking, different groups, Christian and non-Christian, and also lay preaching. And during the time when I was a head teacher, I also was the pastor, the minister of a Baptist church. How's about
Man, you have done a lot. All right. Well, I got some questions already for you from just what you shared. So you mentioned the Christian education or Christian schools are very uncommon over there. Did I hear you right when you said that?
Yes, there are schools that would say there were Christian background schools. In the state system, there are schools that are under the banner of the Church of England, Anglican schools, and there are also Roman Catholic schools. The Methodists have a tiny number of schools, not very many. Baptists don't engage in state education at all. I've never come across a Baptist school, but they're state-funded schools, so the taxpayer funds the actual school. And probably about towards half the total schools in the UK are Church of England or Roman Catholic. Many of the primary schools are Church of England, Roman Catholic, less so in the secondary sector. We have a primary sector which goes from 3 to 11, and then a secondary sector from 11 to 18, and then they go on to universities after that. So that's the
So,
overall broad picture.
the government pays for Christian education then over there. Like it's like common, it's common for that to be publicly funded by your government to have like the Church of England.
Only the Church of England and Roman Catholic schools. 93% of the children in England are in a state school. 7% are in an independent school, a private school. And within the private sector, there are quite a few Christian-based schools, different denominations. And I was head of two schools that had leanings towards evangelical type education. So the first one was an ex-Brethren school. It had been an open Brethren school, and the last one had links with the Church of England, and indeed the Baptist Church as well. But that's in the independent sector. And there's an organisation which I've been a member of called TISCA, which is the Independent Schools Christian Alliance, and that's got quite a lot of members, both schools and individuals. That's in the private sector. In the state sector, I was deputy principal of a Church of England school. So that's
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't understand the Church of England correlation there. So there's a lot of the kids are getting then, whether they like it or not, are they getting from like if they're under the Church of England schools that they're getting some type of talk about the Bible then every day at school?
legally, they're supposed to. Legally,
Wow.
but in practice it doesn't happen always, so it's quite variable in the state system. They're supposed to have a daily assembly, so a meeting usually happens in the morning, can happen any time of day, and you get maybe a guest speaker or somebody on the school staff will give a message out. In the state system, it's a message that's secular usually. It's on any topic from a secular angle. In the Christian schools, that's the Church of England, Roman Catholic, it usually is a message based on the Bible. And the same in the independent sector, in the Christian schools there.
Very cool. Well, you've been in this for a while, so I'd love to hear some of the challenges that maybe you face or maybe the current school sector in your area is facing. So what are some of the challenges that come to mind? I know you kind of already mentioned one, but what are some other ones that come to mind that you guys are facing right now?
At the moment, the schools are having problems with buildings more than anything. So there's a big issue at the moment. It's been headlines in our press, our media. So there've been a lot of schools badly built in the 1960s, 1970s. These are state schools, and they're all crumbling away. So they're talking about needing hundreds of millions of pounds to put the problem right. And of course, that means the government have got to provide more money from somewhere to fix the problem. Some schools haven't reopened last week because they've been saying that they're dangerous to buildings. So that's the major issue that's facing the state system at the moment.
Do you guys have buildings that are like empty anywhere in the area? Like, so like here in the United States, there's different areas you can go, like an old abandoned like warehouse or an old abandoned something that they can repurpose and to make a school. Is that common over there to have empty buildings that you could repurpose?
That's uncommon in England. Schools have been basically put together, built from scratch on land. It's not usually a building that's been redeveloped. So that would be quite rare in England. And even in the state system, they have to obviously find some land to build. Say the Church of England want to build a new school somewhere, then they have to finance, I think, half of it, and the government will give them the other half, give the church the other half. But that will be a state school as well. In the private sector, everything's funded by the schools. The private sector don't get any help from the government whatsoever.
Wow. What are some other ones that come to mind for you?
Sorry?
What are some
Other
other challenges?
challenges at the moment? Well, I think the challenge, one challenge is finding enough teachers. There's a bit of a glut at the moment, so the government are trying to encourage more people to go into teaching. We've had adverts on our TVs encouraging people to we've got quite low unemployment in England at the moment, so they're trying to entice people to consider teaching as a career. So that's an issue. Pay is always an issue as well, usually salaries, but generally teachers are fairly well paid compared to other professions. So it's a reasonable sort of profession to enter financially at the moment. We've got strikes on in various sectors of the economy, but the train drivers are on strike at the moment, or have been a lot. But the teachers, they've been threatening, but so far they've done a settlement with the government recently on pay. So that's in the state sector, of course. In the private sector, the schools can pay what they want. I worked on an inspection about 5 years ago with the highest paid head teacher in England, and his salary was over £400,000 a year.
Oh my goodness.
I didn't earn quite that much.
Yeah, I'm gonna do the conversion real quick for everybody listening because that's a lot. It's
A lot of dollars, that.
$1 million. Yeah.
Yeah, but in the state system, that the head teacher of a large secondary will earn over £100,000 a year now. So
Really?
yeah, in the state system, of a large, 1,500 pupil comprehensive school, they're called. They would earn good money. Yeah, in a primary school, they wouldn't get anything like that much. They might get 60 or 70,000 a year. Still, it's quite a good salary though, compared to other professions.
Is your cost of living pretty high too, or is that like pretty good to live on for your area?
It's pretty high, the cost of living. I've got one of my sons is a teacher in London. He's a primary teacher. He's in middle management. He earns, I can tell you maybe, he earns about 50,000 a year. His wife's a doctor, so she earns about the same money, and they can't yet afford a house because in London the house prices are astronomical. So even though they've got good salaries, it's difficult to get on the housing ladder for them. But they're on the edge now. They may be getting close. But that's a problem.
So his wife's a doctor and only makes 50 as well. I would have thought that would have made more. Is that also comparable to the teachers over there?
Well, she's only been a doctor for a year, So
Okay.
she's a psychiatrist. So she's in her, 1 year in a hospital, working in a hospital in London. So she'll go up. She'll go past my son, I think, fairly soon.
Okay.
But he's aspiring to, he's about 40 now. He's aspiring to be a head teacher too, following his father. So in a few years, he might earn quite a bit more too. But housing is a problem generally in England. The rents and the mortgages are very high. So a lot of income has to go towards housing, basically.
Dang.
Houses in the States are much cheaper.
Yeah, and it all depends on to where. Like, if you talk, obviously it's a bigger country too. So you go like, all right, if you go to, like, I was just traveling this past weekend, and I went up to watch a college football, American football game at one of the colleges that I'm a fan of, and the area that they're in, I was comparing the houses there to the houses where I live or other parts, and it was like well under half the cost just in from a 3 or 4 hour drive different for like what it's like. And it's just crazy everywhere across the country. Certain places are just thriving and they're so overpriced in my opinion. And in other places you can get a really, really cheap house, but you probably don't want to live there, you know? So yeah, it definitely depends.
Same
But
in
yeah.
this country. Yeah, if you live in one of the older industrial areas, it wouldn't be too nice, the environment. So you get the cheap house, but you get a few problems with it, social problems. But
Exactly.
yeah.
Well, so you mentioned the challenges. I'd love to hear what's going good. If there's some things you could brag on for the schools in the area, the school system in the area, anything that comes to mind, you're like, man, this is going really, really well here for our area, our country. Anything do you want to share on that one?
It's interesting that I think the last statistics I saw for like where the best schools are in the world was pushing us up the league table. So our standards in education are now better than what they were maybe say even 10 years ago. We seem to have progressed. The number one is often quoted as being Finland in Europe. I don't know whether that's in the world. It perhaps is as well. But so they've got a very high standard system in Finland, and we've been trying to aspire to get higher up into the sort of top 10 in the world. And the Asian countries do well usually if it's based on academic prowess. So places like Singapore, Hong Kong, China even have all got high places in the academic league tables. I don't know where the US are, where you'd figure. But standards are pretty good. We have about 130 universities in the country now. That's a lot more than when I went to university back in the 1960s. We only had about 40 universities then, but now we've got about 130. So when I went to university in the 1960s, only 10% of the population would go on to university. Now it's 50%. So half the children going through the system now end up going to university doing a course. But there's been quite a debate about it because many of them do courses which perhaps there's not much demand for when it comes to employment. So people have been saying, but we're always short of electricians and plumbers, people who work with their hands, and we need to have more people qualifying as electricians, plumbers, carpenters, rather than going on to do a degree in, I don't know, media studies at university, which is one of the degrees that's not looked upon as being, too highly valuable.
Yeah. Now we got that same problem here. I know we need more of the trades people
Yeah.
to here in the States. So it's funny that that's the same thing over there as well.
Is it? Yeah. Yeah. The Prime Minister's been keen to try and see that more resources in the future are put into vocational education. We used to do a lot more way back, but now it's been that you have to go to university, really, and do a degree in perhaps an academic type subject. But there's been a swing back towards more needing to be vocationally trained, hairdressers and all sorts of professions where there's a shortage, maybe.
Man, anything else on the what's going really good before I ask you the final question?
I don't know. I can't think of anything that's massively going well. We have an issue with the independent sector. If the Labour Party get elected, that's the left wing party in England, which is likely next year. We have elections. They are threatening to tax more the independent sector, the independent schools. They're going to tax them with what we call VAT, which will add 20% onto the fees to go to a private school. So that will be quite significant. It'll mean quite a few people won't be able to send their children to into the private sector. At the moment, it's 7%, so that's quite a lot. But the Labour Party will argue that they get the best jobs. They go to Oxford and Cambridge more, and that they're in smaller classes in the private sector, which is all true. So there's going to be an interesting time next year if the Labour Party are elected and Rishi Sunak loses his job.
Man, that's a huge increase for sure in fees. You think about
It
what's an
will.
average independent school cost to go to a year. Is there a
It, yeah,
you have a
in the private, well, I inspected one of our top independent schools a few years ago, Charterhouse, and their fees are 45,000 a year.
Wow. Dang,
In
man.
dollars,
And you
that's
take about
a
that. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's over fit. I think it's over 50. Yeah, let's look at it here. So
I
40,
have to get my
you said
calculator out.
45,000?
45,000 a year. Yeah, it's a school that ranks with Eton and Rugby and Winchester, which are our top leading public schools. You need a large sum of money, income to send your kids there, but your kids also have to be extremely bright as well to get in. So, the exams are very stiff to try and get in. And then if you do get in, it's going to cost you a lot of money.
Man, yeah, $56,000 a year to go to that one. So,
Yeah. My school was a boarding school, one of the main school where I was a head teacher, Christian school. Our fees were nothing like that. They were about 25,000 a year, so a lot less if you were living in the school. If you were coming as a day student, they would be 10 to 15,000 a year, so a lot less. Yeah.
I would say our average, and again, we have such a wide range here in the United States. So
Yeah.
I would say the average I've heard from the people talking on the podcast, you're on at $10,000 a year. But there's boarding schools are very, very rare here for what we have. But that's for just a day school, about $10,000. But I've seen as low as 3,000, 4,000 a year, all the way up to 30, 50,000. We've seen those up here as well. So
Yeah, yeah,
right there.
yeah. It's interesting because when I was marketing my school overseas, which I did quite a bit of, when I'd go to a sort of conference and a convention where people were bringing their children to look at a range of schools, the American schools always undercut me, as did the Australian schools. So if the Chinese were looking for an English education, they would find it a lot cheaper to go to an American school or to an Australian school or New Zealand school. So it was tough marketing out in China or South Korea, somewhere like
Yeah. Is it, and it was, so it was hard to find people in the country itself to go to the school. You had to go all the way, like you had to look outside of England to find people to go to it, to fill it.
Yeah, I traveled extensively to the Middle East and to Asia. That's where the main markets are for overseas students, because we had a accommodation in the school. We were a boarding school as well as a day school. So I went to 8, 9 different countries, including Russia. So I went to Moscow 3 times as well to recruit some Russians. I did have some American students. They were parents working. The town where the school was based, the main industry was building helicopters, and so we had some specialist people in from, I don't know, Lockheed or somewhere, who came from America. Arizona, I think most of them came from, and they joined the school.
Very
Yeah.
cool. I know Boeing, there's a huge Boeing office there. I don't know if it was,
Is
or I don't
that?
know if Lockheed, but Boeing,
I
like the
don't know.
airplanes, Boeing. That's very, but that's cool though. That's awesome.
They were okay. They were very positive, the American parents. You have a very positive outlook in life, I think, generally, more so than British people. So they were good to have on board. They'd always help out with things, if you wanted to get something done and ask them to do something, they'd always say, yeah, we'll do it, no
I appreciate that. It's good
questions
to know. I'm glad to hear
asked.
that.
Yeah, very impressed.
Well, as I ask you my last question, I'd love to hear like what's a piece of advice? You've been doing this, you did this for a long time. Is there a piece of advice you would share with any of the school leaders that are listening? What would that be?
I think if you're aspiring to leadership, the important thing is to get obviously good people around you. If you've got people who are not so good, you need to somehow say goodbye to them, because it's very key at running a school, managing it, that you've got people at the top who are going to help you to develop the school. And always seek advice, I think, is good to have. I used to meet with other head teachers. I was chair of the Head Teachers Association for the South of England, and so we had meetings regularly, once every few months, where we'd share ideas together and, work out problems that people had, try and help people. That's quite important, I think. If you're a head teacher, you need some good governors of the school who are going to support you as well as, the parents who are going to be on board with you, if you make good decisions. When I started as a head, somebody, well, I think an older head said to me, try and get 90% of your decisions right for your school. You'll make mistakes, but don't make too many. 10%'s about the most. I never forgot that. I thought, well, I've got to do my best and get an A, for making decisions and the right ones. Because if you make a bad decision, like a drop of clanger, it can be difficult to resurrect the situation.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
But I had a great
Well, Paul.
time, in education, and I made the right decision moving from accountancy at an early age.
Well, I'm glad you did. I appreciate all the years of service you did in education, and I appreciate you taking time out of your day, out of retirement and surfing on the beach, to chat with me for a little bit.
You won't get me
So
on
I wish I wish you nothing but the best though, in the rest of your retirement, Paul. Thank you for taking time out of your day to talk on the podcast. And if you're ever over in the United States, specifically Florida, send me a message on LinkedIn. Let me know. I'd love to get together with you.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Mitchell, for inviting me.
Well, another huge shout out and a thank you to Paul for taking time and being on the podcast today. I love his insight. I love his background on education. And I love just hearing one from another person over in Europe, over in England, what all they're doing in education and how it is different from the United States. Super cool perspective. So I hope you guys were able to take at least one thing from today's episode that you can take back to your school to make it better than it is right now. And of course, there are some great ways to connect with us here at School Success. One of those is our private Facebook community. I want you guys to join that if you're not already a part of it. Completely free. It's called School Success Makers because that's what you guys are. I'm personally in that group. Would love to see you in there as well. School Success Makers, private group on Facebook just for school leaders. And we have an awesome website with some great resources on there as well. I want you to go get plugged in. One of those is our weekly newsletter called the School Success Report. It's in the top right corner when you go there, a little button to be able to sign up for it so you don't miss any of those. Great articles, resources. We're going to do some giveaways and some fun things for teachers and administrators of schools. So make sure you're not missing out on that weekly School Success Report that's going to be going out. So is that it? I guess the only other thing is, guys, if you're loving the episodes here, it does take a lot of time and resources to put these out. Would love a 5-star review from you for you to share it out on social. Give us a tag, give me a tag on my profile. I would love some shout outs on there and to spread the word so more educators can get more out of these episodes and make their schools better and the environment better for their students, because that's what we're doing this for. And we'll be back here next week with another awesome guest, as usual, on the School Success Podcast. We'll see you then.